Hi, I'm Jennifer Vine, President and CEO of the Education Foundation of Sarasota County and your host for Education Conversations, a discussion forum to share innovative and relevant thoughts, research, and ideas on education today. In today's podcast, we explore ways to help prepare students to thrive. Welcome to this episode of Education Conversations, the 411 on FAFSA and financial aid. And for those of you who listen to our podcasts often, just to let you know, this is going to be a pretty technical aspect, but for those parents and families that are interested in what's happening in the world of paying for college, anything post-secondary, including the changes in FAFSA, stand by and listen up to this podcast for us, because in December of 2020, Congress passed the FAFSA Simplification Act, which set out to make the free application for federal student aid more streamlined and to increase the eligibility for federal student aid. While the process was delayed in 2023, on December 31st, ta-da, the new application launched. Completing the FAFSA is a vital step in and key indicator of the process of preparing for education after high school, and unfortunately, many students and families don't even complete it, missing out on the opportunity to get free money to help finance post-secondary studies. Just to put some things into some framework here, last year alone in 2023, only a little skosh over 55% of students in Sarasota County schools even submitted an application, which was down from a high of 56% the previous year. That does translate into many students, just so you know, from that percentage, as we have thousands of students in our school district. And if we actually returned a 56% completion rate, students could be receiving an estimated $3.4 million in Pell Grant awards, according to our director of Sarasota's Local College Access Network, Thomas Williams. The FAFSA and other financial aid can make all the difference in the lives of students who want to earn a college degree or certification. And so we're going to provide today, with the help of a really special guest, a practical overview and considerations for students and families as they begin to plan for what those next steps are. So to get on this 411 call for FAFSA and financial aid, I'm really happy to be joined today with Andrea LaChapelle, the Director of Financial Aid at the State College of Florida for Manatee and Sarasota. A Northeasterner, she is from Rhode Island, and she moved to Florida in 2018 to guide the State College of Florida in its financial services. She has a plethora of extensive experience in financial aid, having worked in this field for 26 years, and she's been an amazing community partner and vital resource for us in our local college access network. So she is a wealth of knowledge and guided in her belief that education after high school should be available to everyone. Andrea, welcome to Education Conversations, and thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, this is great. I think we're going to learn a lot about FAFSA, and I think you certainly are the local subject matter expert in this topic. So I want to just go ahead and dive in. So before we get started with changes to FAFSA, I'd like to start just by asking you, what is the free application for federal student aid? How would you define that?
It is simply an application. It's kind of like a screening, I tell people, to see what your eligibility would be if you decide to pursue higher education after high school. It collects information as far as income, what institutions are you looking to go to, and some other demographic information. And it gives an indication, it's called a student aid index, to determine eligibility for all federal aid programs. That's the federal Pell Grant, something called an SEOG, which is a Supplemental Education Opportunity Grant, the federal student loan programs, and also college work study. It is a screening. So a student can complete it and doesn't necessarily have to take it. It's not like applying for a loan. It's not credit-based. It just gives the student and the family information on what they would qualify for to aid in paying a student's cost of attendance.
So it gives them more information about where they're positioned, perhaps, and with the opportunities that may be available to them should they decide to pursue those.
Correct.
Yeah, that's terrific. And would you advise all families complete a FAFSA?
I would. Not only to see what their eligibility is, because there is a myth out there that people don't qualify for financial aid. It's not that you don't qualify for financial aid. What the FAFSA does is determine what you qualify for. So anyone who is a first time going to college who hasn't completed any college credits, it lets you know what your eligibility would be. Does it include any grant funding? What are your options as far as the federal student loan program? Because if you don't complete a FAFSA, you're not even eligible to participate in the federal student loan program, which has historically low rates for interest. It also allows a student, if eligible, to participate in federal college work study, which is an invaluable resource to gain some skills while you're going to college, particularly in your major that you're studying, to get the opportunity to start building on your resume before you even complete your education. It also is required for certain scholarships that are merit-based. The application is going to ask you, what is your SAI or your student aid index? Because they use that to help determine what type of need-based aid that you could be qualified for.
Okay, so all families, if you've got a college going, and that means anything after high school, post-secondary plan student in your family household, you should complete the FAFSA.
Correct. I do get that question a lot, especially during the FAFSA open houses that we have. My student qualifies for Bright Futures. I don't see a need to do a FAFSA. The FAFSA allows you to get aid in addition to the direct costs of going to college, so tuition and fees, which is what Bright Futures covers. It's usually not enough to also pay or offset the cost if your student is going to be living on campus at a Florida institution. So what other opportunities do you have to pay that bill to cover housing and different things like that? That's where the FAFSA application picks up that gap funding after Bright Futures.
That's terrific. And for the families who have college going, and again, as we say college going again, federal aid is also available at technical colleges. So I just want to point that out, as my terminology may give people the perception I'm only talking about the four-year universities. We're talking about all things. So Andrea, is there, can you give a definition so that we know what that FAFSA would cover?
Financial aid covers programs that lead to either gainful employment in a professional certificate, associate's degree, bachelor's degree, master's degree, or professional certificate, as long as the institution you're attending is approved to disperse federal student aid.
Okay, thank you for that clarity on that answer. And so for those of you who do have a student that is in that neighborhood of post-secondary pursuits, you are probably quite familiar with FAFSA and the reputation FAFSA has for its application. And so it has been streamlined. And so we kind of had a little bit of a process as they were introducing the new FAFSA, but it did come with a lot of simplification. So can you, Andrea, kind of shape for us, what are some of the changes that we're seeing with the new FAFSA application?
The biggest change is that the simplification of it for the student and the parent as applicants is so streamlined. When you are finished completing, if it's the student and the parent that answer all of the questions, you are now potentially only going to answer a maximum of 36 questions. You can do it all electronically. It's a good idea to have your tax returns with you, but you're now just saying to the FAFSA, I authorize the IRS to release my information directly to complete the FAFSA. So you don't have to worry about any typos, transposing numbers, entering the wrong line number off of your federal returns. The IRS and the Department of Education have worked out a way to seamlessly communicate together and complete a student's FAFSA. So when I started in the field, or even when I was applying for FAFSA by myself, it was a 4 or 5 hour paper application. It could have been up to, I think at that time, it was over 140 questions. If you missed one, you got your application back in the mail saying you needed to make a correction. With this new application, you cannot submit unless all the questions have been answered. And again, it's 36 questions. The student answers only questions that pertain to their information. A link is sent out to a parent or a contributor to add their information. And it protects the privacy so the parent cannot see the student's information. And the student can no longer see the parent's information. It is completely locked down, which is fantastic, because I'm sure there's a lot of parents out there that aren't really crazy about the idea of their student knowing what they're actually pulling in for income. Mm-hmm. So it really brings back what's called FERPA, which is the Family Education Right Protection Act, to protect the information of students and parents.
Wow, that sounds like an incredible simplification to go down to 36 questions. That's impressive. So that sounds great in theory. What reservations do you have, and what are some of the kinks that we're maybe seeing with this change? What could be maybe some of the pitfalls or drawbacks?
So on December 31st, when they went live with the link opening up FAFSA, it was a soft launch. It was open for 1 hour that day.
That's soft.
It is. Was extremely soft. So for the first couple of weeks after it was launched, they weren't publicizing what times it was going to be available. It was kind of luck of a draw. Click on the link and it may let you begin the application. It tells you that it was down. What we're seeing as far as pitfalls is, just like anything that you try for the first time, there's always going to be little wrinkles. So it's working very well right now for students who come prepared. What I mean by prepared is they have gone ahead and they've completed what's called their FSA ID, which is a federal student aid ID that is specifically to that particular student. And both of their parents have created a federal student aid ID. If they don't have one from when they have done either other children's FAFSAs and signed it electronically, or they could have a federal student aid ID themselves. As long as they come prepared with both of those, we are helping students complete the FAFSA maybe within a half hour,
wow,
if not less. We are seeing, and the Department of Education has been very open with letting us know, that they are having difficulty with federal student aid IDs for undocumented individuals or those individuals who do not have Social Security numbers. Where that's important is the parent, even though they may not be a citizen or a permanent resident, but their child is, their child still needs to complete a FAFSA to see what they're eligible for. So as part of this launch, the federal student aid ID was supposed to allow individuals without Social Security numbers complete an FSA ID so then they could complete the parent portion of the FAFSA. The Department of Education is having a difficult time at this moment completing that process, so it's kind of on a hold. So the students whose parents are undocumented, they can start their FAFSA, but we're in a holding pattern right now until they finish working out those kinks for the parent to add their information onto the student's record.
And then where would a family go to get the latest updates? Do they go directly to the FAFSA website?
FAFSA website does have this all up there. It is updated with links. I'm seeing it once every couple of days. They can work with their high school guidance counselors. They can work with the Education Foundation of Sarasota, or even the financial aid offices at the colleges that they're looking at going to. Because this isn't a institution by institution issue, it is clear across the federal student aid environment world.
Right.
For example, someone on my staff went and asked a question over chat the other day to federal student aid. When they asked the question, it was pertaining to FSA IDs for undocumented individuals, and the agent on the other end ended the chat.
Oh.
So don't give up asking questions. They have very long call times. The chat's not always available. But work with your colleges, work with your high school guidance counselors, because we are sharing that information out as it becomes available. And we will let certain institutions, partners, and everything know to let the students how to continue forward.
Thank you for that. And as she was referencing also, there's many collaborations between all of these institutions, entities, partners, whether it's the schools, the Education Foundation, the different state universities, community colleges, all working together to make sure families have the resources and supports to complete the FAFSA. So just know that we have a lot of FAFSA open house nights where we really will bring the staff. Andrea is there
with
every time. Walking families through it. So I would just say I have a lot of perseverance right now, because mm-hmm. at the end, it certainly will be worth it. And it is unfortunate with some of the kinks, I think, that are going through. But the long game of the simplification seems to be the cost-benefit analysis, that over time, it really will pay off for families in the end.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's good. A lot of times people say it's important you complete the FAFSA early.
Correct.
And before it was October 1st, now we're seeing it's December 31st mm-hmm. onward. Why is it important families complete it sooner rather than later? What difference does that make?
So under normal circumstances in a financial aid year, some funding that institutions get from the Department of Education or even from scholarship partners, they look to see the date the FAFSA was completed, because they are given a set amount of funding, and once it is spent, it's done. So a lot of institutions, I know State College of Florida does for our COG grant, preference is given to the earlier the application is received. If you want the ability to maximize your award, the earlier you apply, the better your chances are that the institution hasn't run out of that funding when your file comes up to be awarded.
Okay, and so just to walk through the sequence, it's important to fill out the screening, which is the FAFSA. That's going to give you an indication of kind of what is being available to you. Mm-hmm. Then as you apply to your university or your college and your application, your financial aid application is reviewed, they give you an award letter. Mm-hmm. You can choose then to accept, deny, part, and full. How does that process work then as they receive the award letter?
It is individual per school, but certain funding is automatic. So individuals who screen are eligible for the federal Pell Grant, you don't have to take any action. That funding is yours. What you want to look for is in the award letter, it is very particular on what your aid is going to cover. So the institution is required to say what your cost of attendance is. Keep in mind that it is direct and indirect costs. So the cost of living either on campus or off campus, books and supplies, how much it is to feed you. They will give you one full dollar amount of what it costs to go to that institution for a full year. Then your financial aid package gets awarded to the total of those direct and indirect costs. And then you want to see, after all of your federal student aid has been exhausted, you have the federal Pell Grant. If you have any additional grants or internal scholarships, your federal student loan offers, those you have to accept. So it's not an automatic. And then you want to see, is there a funding gap? Is there a balance after all federal student aid and institutional scholarships have been given? That number, you would need to start exploring to see alternative funding sources like private loans, Parent PLUS loans, or even other scholarship opportunities to help bridge that gap.
That is very helpful. So that's a great roadmap for families to follow. And certainly accessing the federal grant, which you do not pay back, mm-hmm. is probably the best thing to leverage out
Absolutely.
Of the gate. Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay. So what are some of the biggest misconceptions that you regularly encounter regarding the FAFSA and other financial aid?
It's too hard. My friend didn't get federal student aid. That is probably one of my favorites. Federal student aid is probably the most individualistic determination of going to college. Every single student has to be reviewed differently. We cannot look at it on a full population. You may think because your friend graduated high school at the same time as you and you live in the same neighborhood or in the same area that your financial aid package is going to be exactly the same. You couldn't be further from the truth. That because your parents are undocumented, that you wouldn't qualify for federal student aid. That is another one that we hear. That I'm going to be denied, so why bother? Like I said at the very beginning of our conversation, that one bothers me to the core because it is a screening to see what you qualify for. So just because you may not qualify for the federal Pell Grant doesn't mean that there aren't other federal student aid opportunities that are still available to you. I'm going to hold my financial aid until I go to college at a four-year instead of at the community college or a technical institution. Not always the greatest idea because a lot of times you need that funding while you're going to college because life happens and you may need assistance paying those expenses before you end up at the four-year institution. And I hate to see when somebody gives up because they encounter financial hardship when they could have had some assistance from federal student aid if they just took the time to ask some questions.
Wow, those are some great misconceptions. And so, again, I think what I keep hearing you say is fill out your FAFSA.
Absolutely. I will say that time and time and time again. Anytime I get to speak to a group of high school students or their parents, fill out the FAFSA. The worst thing you can do is not apply.
Yeah, and the first time that a student is eligible to apply for the FAFSA is when it opens in their senior year of high school.
Correct. So one thing I can say for certain going forward is next year's application for next year's seniors will open on October 1st, 2024 for the 25-26 financial aid year.
There you go.
This year, it's just different. We have not had a change like this in federal student aid. Probably since they first put the FAFSA online, and then before that, it all fell under the Higher Education Opportunity Act from the 1960s.
Wow. So the graduating class of 2024, unfortunately, is feeling the pain points of this transition. But certainly we hope that you all will persevere, because it certainly could pay off literally for your family's benefit.
Absolutely. And what I'm seeing and what I'm telling the students and their parents as I'm meeting with them, this is the easiest application that has ever been done on record. The burden is on institutions of higher education and scholarship providers to adjust what we've been doing for so long to meet the demands of the students just at a later date. It is the easiest application for students and parents now. There's no reason not to collect it, because the questions they're asking are pretty much demographic and checking a box.
Oh, gosh, that is great. And as I mentioned before, you are involved in our collective work that involves State College of Florida, University of South Florida, and so many partners through Planet Sarasota, and you and your team are at many of those FAFSA open house nights. What should families plan for? How long, and what do they need when they show up at those open houses?
When they show up, they're going to want to bring their federal student aid IDs that they've created. They want that, which usually consists of also having access to their email address or their email inbox when they arrive, just in case we need to do a retrieval. It's always a good idea to bring your 2022 tax returns with you, but pretty much that's really it, and we can walk you through it. If you arrive on time and we have a computer available to you, we are usually turning around an entire application that includes adding parent information within a half hour max.
Wow. Okay. And how would a family create their FSA ID?
So if you go on studentaid.gov and you go to start doing your FAFSA, it comes up with enter your FSA ID in the bottom left-hand corner. It says don't have one, create one.
So that little tiny language below the box says don't have one. That's what they need to click. Mm-hmm. That's great. Okay.
It is very easy to find. Super. Or you can just type in FSA ID. It'll bring you up to a landing page, and you can either use your credentials or create one.
There you go. Okay. Easy enough, people. So you've been doing this work for a long time.
Very long time. when you said it earlier, I think I felt my face blush, because I can't believe it's been that long.
Well, you've helped many students achieve their dreams. So that hopefully gives you some satisfaction. So in your lifespan, your career span, what's been the most rewarding part of your job?
I was telling somebody, and I tell my staff this all the time, financially, it can be pretty high burnout, and it's really not that fun. But once a year, probably towards the end of the spring semester, when I'm sitting there saying, am I really going to do this another year? Somebody comes in that always says, thank you. It's just that one thank you, because you don't know who you're talking with on a daily basis and what they've had to overcome to do it and struggles that they've had. And you could be that shining moment for that person that helped them persevere. And it's that happens every year. I never know when it's going to happen, but just those two simple words of thank you, it's why I do what I do.
Wow, that's terrific. And everyone, if you've gleaned any interest, I will tell you, you can find her. You can find her on the State College of Florida campus. And so I say all that just because they are very fortunate to have you leading the financial aid office for that college.
Thank you. The honor is all mine. They gave me the opportunity to come.
It's amazing. So, and thank you for what you do for Planet Sarasota. Thank you for always showing up and just sharing this information. And listeners, I hope this has been helpful for you all. So Andrea, one last time, what is the website that listeners should go to complete their FSA ID?
Studentaid.gov.
Okay, that's your first step, people, studentaid.gov. To find out more about the FAFSA open houses and any of the calendar events that we have, you can certainly visit our website at edfoundationsrq.org. You'll see a drop down there for events. Just click that link and it'll take you through to the entire calendar of our FAFSA workshops, and we certainly hope you will join us for any of those. And listeners, if you want to learn more about the State College of Florida and their financial aid services, I really do encourage you to visit their website at scf.edu. So everyone, thank you so much for listening to today's podcast, and thank you again, Andrea, for being a part of this conversation, and we hope that you all tune in to our other episodes of Education Conversations. For now, this is Jennifer Vine, signing off for the Education Foundation of Sarasota County.